Is just settling in, and normally a Sunday afternoon we're dozing off. So if I fall asleep, please throw something at me, and I'll attempt to wake up and carry on. So I remember there was a pastor in America, and he was got invited to speak to this church in out in the Wops. It was in the desert somewhere. And they never had air conditioning, and they, you know, so on a day it'd be 50 degrees, no air conditioning, you know, fans just wouldn't cut it. And this visiting pastor says, well, he went to one of the elders and he said, well, how do you keep your congregation awake? Because it's just like stifling, and I just want to go to sleep. And he says, well, what we do is each of the deacons have a pocket knife. And they get a stick, and before the service, they sort of make that needle point of the stick, right? You know, so it's like really almost penetrates the skin on contact. And so once it's sharp as, what they do is then they get up, and at a particular time of the service, or when the preacher's preaching, they'll go around and they prod the preacher. Because they reckon that if a preacher has got a little bit of enthusiasm and life in him, then people will be more likely to stay awake. And John Wesley said this, get on fire for God and people will come to watch you burn. Get on fire for God and people will come to watch you burn. So what you're saying is absolutely right. Everything that we've been talking about comes out of our relationship with the Lord. It's something that we can't manufacture. It's something that we can't hide behind. But, you know, our love for the Lord, our closeness to the Lord dictates how bold we are when it comes to serving Him. Remember last night, the Pharisees were amazed at these men because they were uneducated. But they took note that they had been with Jesus. They had been with Jesus. So we're gonna carry on our session, and we're going to this. These sessions are going to be highly practical, and you're going to have to do a little bit of stuff. So you're not going to have to just. We're going to have to do some things to help you to remember, and we're going to look at really launching into gospel conversations. Now, last night, for those that weren't here, we looked at who has God called us to witness to. Who are the people that God's placed in our lives so that we can demonstrate the reality of God, so they can see that God does exist and He works in people, and who has God placed in our lives so that we not only demonstrate the reality of God, but that we can actually speak the truth about God and how they can have the reality of God in their own life. And we looked at and we identified who God has placed around us to be able to do that. We talked about making disciples. Now, in Matthew, it says, in Matthew 28, it says, go into all the world and... preach the gospel to make... Yeah, Mark says, go into all the world and preach the gospel. It's a command. And remember the verb, or the main part, the doing thing, is not the going, but it's either the preaching... and the disciple making. And so this is a really significant point that I just want to highlight and reiterate, that when it comes to making disciples, and we looked a bit about that, we looked at that last night, when it comes to doing evangelism, the main thing is that we are intentional about it. That we're not passively thinking about it. It's not just something, oh, we'll just do it when it hits us in the face. Because if we're passive about making disciples, if we're passive about sharing the gospel, we'll miss so many opportunities. We will miss even seeing the opportunities. Because we're preoccupied with other things. That's why the verb is to make disciples. As you're living your life, make a disciple. As you're going to sports, make a disciple. As you are at work, make disciples. You know, as you're living your life, preach the gospel. And so it's something that we have to be intentional about, because if we're not intentional, it just won't happen. We have busy lives, don't we? It's hard enough to fit everything in. And so if we just add making disciples and evangelism as an optional extra or just tack it onto our lives, we won't find time. We have to be intentional about it. We have to be intentional at strengthening those relationships that we have that God has placed around us so that they can see God in our lives. And we have to be intentional about taking the opportunity to communicate our faith when it arises. And the more we're intentional and the more we're looking, the more opportunities we get. So you circled the people that you felt that God was placed on your heart to be more intentional at demonstrating grace and truth to. And so my encouragement is that you would pray for them every day. You commit to praying for them every day. You would try and meet up with them at least once this week and do something together. Not to necessarily do anything spiritual, but so that you can strengthen that relationship, that you can grow that relationship so that they can see God in you. And you'll find as you purposefully strengthen your relationships with those people, opportunities will just naturally occur through conversation and through whatever goes on. So we're going to be looking at how to be intentional today at talking about our faith. And it's not easy. When we think, you know, we might have friends and we can talk to them about a lot of things. We can have a lot of fun. But as soon as we think about sharing the gospel or bringing God into the situation, our brains shut down. You know, our palms get sweaty. And it almost becomes so hard. For most people, and you'll probably agree, from the average Christian, the most difficult part of evangelism is initiating gospel conversations. You know, where do I start? What do I say? What will they think? And we have got this playing through our mind, and it almost paralyzes us. In OAC, we have a few sayings. One of our famous sayings is RFA, ready for anything. You know, the Bible talks about, you know, you've got to be ready to share your faith or give a reason for the hope you have in season and out of season. So there's only two times you should ever share the gospel, and that's when you feel like it and when you don't. And in season and out. And so if there's any other time, you're let off the hook. So and so we have this thing called RFA because a lot of us, you know, for me, like I said, I really struggle and I still get nervous and I still struggle at times. But once I get started, then you kind of can't stop me. But it's getting started that's the hardest part. It's overcoming that fear, those insecurities, that selfishness. And so we have this thing called RFA, ready for anything, because you've got to be ready for anything. You know, you might be walking down the street and you might say hello to someone, just casually pass by and they might stop and have a conversation. That could be an opportunity to share the gospel. And so you want to be ready for anything, but it's really cool if you can help other Christians be ready for anything. For example, you can help your fellow brothers and Christians with initiating gospel conversations. So if you're with a Christian friend or a family member, and you're kind of waiting in line, you might be at the supermarket, you might be at the bank, for those that still wait in line in the bank these days, if you don't have internet banking, you might be going to a rugby game or sports. There might be some people around you, or maybe one person around you, and you want to initiate a gospel conversation. What you do is you turn to your friend and you say, Shane, how did you become a Christian? And then they will answer you and tell them how they, or Shane, why did you become a Christian? And then you've helped them to talk about their faith. And nobody else, they're not part of the conversation, but they listen. And so really, and if they get annoyed, well, you can say to them, well, you know, I wasn't actually talking to you. Well, you shouldn't be eavesdropping on my conversation. But so RFA, ready for anything. So you can help your fellow Christians. So next time you're with someone and there might be people around you, I don't know if there's any elevators in Invercargill, I'm not sure the buildings are that high, but if you're waiting in line, you can just turn and just smile and just say, so, Graham, why did you become a Christian? And he's like, and then he can share why he became a Christian, and people can hear your story and how Christ became real to you, and you can share the gospel. I remember I was going to do this, and we finished a mission in a place called Nuhaka, and we're were at Moriri Hot Springs, and we were just relaxing out, and it was a Sunday afternoon, it was raining, and we went to the hot pools, and all these rugby guys were there, because it was just after the games, and they were, you know, nursing their bruises. And I said to my boss at the time, my director, Marty Rochford, and I says, oh, I'm going to get Kim, and I knew I shouldn't have done this, it was silly of me to reveal my plans. I said, I know what I'm going to RFA him. When we're in the hot pools, I'm going to ask him how he became a Christian, why he became a Christian, and then, you know, he's going to share the gospel to all these people. And so I was happy with myself. I walked out and hopped in the hot pools. It was just like relaxing. It was so good. And I thought, I'll just wait a little bit. And then Kim said, Jeremy. And I looked at him. And I said, why did you become a Christian? I was like, oh! So you know, if you find starting gospel conversations hard, find a Christian to be around and then get them to do it. You just have to initiate it for them, and it's easy because they're just talking to you, and so you're not actually having a conversation. Another particular time where we were at the movies, and this is when Star Wars was showing. It was sort of like a 20th anniversary or something like that, and they were doing the things. And in our younger days, we used to come up with crazy ideas to share the gospel. And me and my friend Robin Murray, he was working with OAC too at the time, he's like, oh, we should preach. Tag preach. You know, before the movie starts, you've got all the people, and before the ads come on, you've got like an audience that just need to be entertained, and they need to, you know, they're just waiting for nothing. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, what the heck are they talking about? Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But I'm a little bit smarter than that. So I said, all right, no, that sounds great. I'll go first. Oh, because I always prefer to go first than anything, particularly if I'm scared out of my wits, because then I get it all over and done with, and I can relax. And so I said, I'll go first. And he was like, oh, well, that's good, because then he didn't actually have to start it. So the place was packed, and it was in the Manawatu downtown complex, and there was a couple hundred seats, and you know, the lights were dim, there was just background music, and I stood up, and I said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad that you're here. My name's Jeremy, and we've just got a pre-match entertainment for you. I'm just going to introduce my friend to you, and he's going to come up, and he was like, what, and he actually shared the gospel. So find someone that you can initiate on, and then they have to do all the work. So, but let's have a look at launching into a gospel conversation. The truth about this, it is difficult to start, but it is not starting a gospel conversation is an acquired skill. It's an acquired skill, not a gift. Only relegated for a few people. You might see people and they think, oh, they just seem such a natural. I could never do that. They've just learned a few skills. And you can learn those skills as well. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes. The more you do it, the better you become at it. You can't expect to play golf like Tiger Woods, although he's not playing that well at the moment, but you can't seek to emulate Tiger Woods and his ability to play golf without practicing hitting golf balls. And so you've got to be able to give yourself freedom to fail, and you've got to practice. And so remember, starting gospel conversations is an acquired skill, not a gift for just a few individuals. And so as we go through this, I'm going to give you some practical helps to enable you to start a conversation with anybody at any time. And this can help you in church, whether the person's a visitor. It can help you if it's a person you've never met on the streets. It can help you if it's a person you know. And so we're going to look through this, and we're going to have some practical help so that we can begin to learn and acquire the skills we need to be able to speak to anybody at any time. And it doesn't mean that you won't get nervous, but what it means is you'll know where to go. You'll know, at least I know what to say next if this happens. And a lot of us don't say anything because we don't know what to say next. We need to start with common conversation. This is really important. You know, you're at work, you're dancing in a little club that you've decided this will be your witness. You know, what are some of the common conversations that you often have? What are some of the things that you naturally talk about? You know, often on Monday morning at work, what does most people talk about or at school? How about the weekend? And you know, and people, like, they talk all about their weekend. And why is it as Christians we talk all about our weekend or what happened on Saturday, but we don't actually go into Sunday? It's a common conversation that can talk, you can actually bring up the topic of Christian things or spiritual things, and it can be natural. You know, and on church, I went to church on Sunday. You might find that a little bit weird. But, and then you can just maybe explain it or have the opportunity to explore it. Start with common conversations. What sort of common conversations do you have? Now, it's really important, and we'll look more about this a little bit as we go on. It's really important. I'm useless at this. I wouldn't even remember my name if people didn't use it in its full length every time I got in trouble. But have you ever met someone and they tell you a name and then just like that, it's gone? Yeah, I do that all the time. It's quite good when you're in a Christian environment because, like, if you end up praying for someone, you can just say brother or sister or something like that. But you can't kind of do that with non-Christians. You can't. But it's really important. Their name is important. And so we want to use their name. We want to learn it and use it. And so what I find, because I am hopeless at learning people's names, I just, you know, unless there's a real sort of out there name that's real odd or they have a distinguishing feature, or wearing something that sort of like helps me, hell, that's that's so-and-so because, you know, something that stands out, I can't remember their name to save myself. But I found a little trick. If you struggle to remember their name, what you need to do is when they say it back straight away. So Graham introduces himself. Nice to meet you, Graham. And then I might start my second sentence with Graham. And so if I say it back and say it out loud, I'm more likely to remember it. Because it's really embarrassing. You're speaking to a person for half an hour and you've got to ask what their name was again when they told you. And also, you know, names are precious. And when someone takes the time to call you by your name, it makes you kind of, I don't know what it is, but it makes you feel like, hey, this person thinks I'm important. So use their name. Learn it and use it. Write it down. Or, you know, write it, jot it down on your hand or something. But I find for me that people open up more the more I use their name because it's personable. They feel like I care about them. And I haven't even done anything spiritual. So learn the name of the person and use it. Listen carefully. Now, this is really important. Tom said, you know, God has given us two ears and one mouth, and we should use them in that proportion. We should listen twice as much as we speak. Always feel like a hypocrite when I say that because I'm always generally doing the speaking. But often we're quick to talk, but we are slow to listen. And I don't know about you, but sometimes someone might be talking and I'm not really listening. I'm just thinking about what I should say next. I'm glad that there's a couple of people that are like me. It makes me feel that I'm not completely alone. But listen carefully, because often the words that they say can give you clues of what's going on deep in their hearts. Sometimes a person that we know, or maybe we don't know, and we're talking to them, they're going through a terrible time. And there might be just a way they said a word. It might be just a word that they might say that might give you a clue that something's not quite right. And then you can probe deeper. But if you're not listening, you just brush over that and you miss a potential opportunity. I was talking to one guy, he was a Māori guy. In fact, I found out that we were actually cousins after our conversation. And he was sort of sitting on his own on the street in Hastings. And I went up to him and I struck up a conversation with him and just used some of the things that we're going to go through here. And he wasn't really responsive. And I thought he wasn't really open to spiritual things or anything like that. But he said a word or he phrased something a certain way that gave me the impression there was something else going on. It wasn't just because he was not interested. And just before I was about to go, because it kind of exhausted everything I wanted to say or try to, you know, probe to create a conversation, I just said, are you all right? Is there anything that I can do for you? And he says, well, I really appreciate that, and I know that I haven't been real talkative, but last night I tried to hang myself and it didn't work. And I'm like, I didn't know at all. Had no idea. He didn't look like someone that would potentially do that. While he was quiet and sort of reserved, he didn't give any impression that he was struggling, and he just began to open up. And he told me all about his life. And I had the privilege of praying with him. And I was able to show grace to him and help him with some things. And then he ended up going to a Bible study. And he ended up actually, over a period of weeks, becoming a Christian. And it was all because I instead of trying to think about what I wanted to say, I was listening and something just didn't quite click. Something was wrong, and I just asked a question to see if there was an opportunity there. There are people that you'll be talking to at work, and they might be going through dark times. And outwardly, they'll be fine. But as we listen, we can pick up on those little things, indicators. We leak information all the time. You know, what we think privately does have an effect of the way we interact with people. Sometimes it's a little bit more subtle than others. So we need to listen carefully, because it's when we listen that provides opportunities to be able to go deeper and open and talk about stuff that's really heartfelt in their life. And it's often those opportunities that allow us to minister the Word of God to them and actually be able to share the gospel with them. So to be a good listener, we need to look at them. This is really important. Have you ever had a conversation with someone and they're kind of looking like this and they're looking all around like that? Well, it doesn't make you feel very listened to, does it? You know, look at them. Now, it's really important if you, with some cultures, you don't eyeball them. You know, because that's a sign of aggression and disrespect. But you kind of want to look at them. You want to show that you're attentive. You don't want to be kind of looking around. Because it shows that you don't really care what they've got to say. You need to show visual approval. You know, that means that that's sort of like, you know, our body language. When I remember one of a person that came and did the training at the School of Evangelism, she was speaking, and as she was speaking, she was talking like this. And so someone's speaking to her, and she's going, "Oh, really?" You know, it's kind of like a little, you know, it's something that she didn't even know she was doing, but it's not like, "I love you, and I'm really, you know, this, I want to deal with you in a minute if you don't stop." But show visual approval. How do you show visual approval? You know, you look at them, you nod. You know, we're good at this, aren't we, men, when we're watching the rugby and someone's talking to us? Yes, dear. Show visual approval. You know, lean forward a little bit that you're listening. You know, some don't have your arms folded. Although I struggle with this because it's really comfortable, this position. Because what do you do with these things? Because I normally use them to talk. So this is my home base. Show visual approval and verbal approval. You know, they might be sharing something with you, and you might not agree. They might be sharing not the truth about something they believe in. And so verbal approval doesn't mean that you say, "Oh, that's good," when it's not. But if they share something, you say, "Oh, I appreciate you really taking the time to share that with me." Why do we do that? We're appreciating them because they don't have to share anything with you. You know, even if they share something that's not biblical, you can still show verbal approval without agreeing with their teaching. "Hey, I appreciate you sharing with me what you believe about God. But as I've studied the scriptures, this is what I've found." See, I haven't agreed with his teaching, but I have approved him being open and honest with me. And this is really important. We need to show verbal approval. You know, thank you so much for being open enough. Thank you for trusting me that you'd share something so deep. I really appreciate it. Well, that experience is amazing. Never had anything like that before, rather than being critical or judgmental. Remember, effective communication is made up of 7% of our words, 38% of our tone of voice, and 55% body language. So you might, and I learned this, you know, being married, and I still, I've said the right words, but then my wife's become really angry with me because of my tone of voice, because of my body language. And I'm like, I'm flabbergasted because I think I just complimented you and now you're upset with me. I'm in the dog box. What have I done wrong? Because actions speak louder than words. Our face, the way we say something, our body language communicates more than just our words. And so we need to make sure that our tone of voice and our body language, our non-verbal language, lines up with what we say. Have you ever had someone sort of give you a compliment and you kind of just know they don't mean it? What gives it away? Well, it's not their words. It's the way they say it. It's their body language. And so we need to remember that only in terms of effective communication is only 7% of what we say. All the rest is other stuff. So if we want to really be able to connect with people, we need to be good listeners. We need to be good listeners. And, you know, I'm speaking to myself because, like I said, I always feel like a hypocrite when I say that because I talk. That's what I do for a living. Ask good questions. We need to ask good questions. Now, what's a good question? What are some good questions? Well, good questions are those that are open-ended. They're fat questions. So, what I mean by fat questions? They're not yes-no questions. How are you? Good. That's a kind of skinny question. You know? And, tell me about your day. That's an open-ended question. Now that means that gives the person, you're giving the person permission to either share as much as they want or as little as they want with no pressure. And so we need to try and have open-ended questions because those are the ones that promote conversation. And you'll see people and you'll possibly know people and it's like, man, that person can just speak to anybody, anywhere. And what they've done is often they've just mastered the art of asking good questions. Open-ended questions, not closed questions. How are you? All right. What's been going on in your life? It's harder just to give a one-pat answer when you give open questions. So what we're going to do is I want you to follow after me, okay, because it is the graveyard shift, so we want to get that blood pump. So you just have to repeat after me. So there is a huge number plate, okay? So everybody, I know it's a little bit different, but it's all right. It's not against the Bible. All righty? So, huge number plate. Everybody? Oh, beautiful. That shows me you're awake. Now we've got to do it together. Now, the reason we're doing this is going to teach us some things, and we're going to do it with action so it can help us to remember some stuff, hopefully remember stuff. So we've got our... Now, on top of that number plate, we have a house. Okay, so we've got a... On top of the number plate, we have a... Now, in front of the house is a family. Okay, so we have a... On top of the number plate is a? In front of the house is a? Family. Excellent. Family, good, because, you know, family embracing. Now, the family are holding a clock. Okay? So, we have a? And on the number plate, we have a? And in front of the house, we have a? And they're holding a? Excellent. Now, in the clock, in the arm of the clock, there is a plane. Okay, there is a plane coming out. Okay, so we've got a... Yes. On the number plate?
Yes.
In front of the house, we have a family holding a
clock.
The clock, the well, it's not a propeller, it's a
plane.
Now, the plane has a propeller, and the propellers are tennis rackets. Okay, a tennis racket. Okay, so we've got a
huge,
and we got a
house.
Front of the house is a
family.
And family holding a
clock.
And the clock is a
plane.
And the propeller is a
tennis.
And screwed into that tennis racket is a light bulb. Okay, so let's do it one more time. Ready, go.
Huge.
Okay.
House.
And then on the house?
Family.
Lock and the plane and the and screwed in?
Light bulb.
Light bulb, excellent. Alrighty, so what does that mean? Okay, stay with me, don't leave yet. We'll get there. Okay, when we're having conversing with a stranger and we're having common conversation, whether it's a person we know or don't know, we need to remember the conversation areas. These are open-ended questions, okay? So we've got these things. And the reason we do it this way is because it's easier to remember than just writing it down. You won't remember this if you write down. Okay, so a huge nameplate is, what is your name? Nameplate, name. Word association game. And then you say it, okay? So we'll go through the meanings and then we'll all do it together. So, but it will look like this. We've got a huge nameplate. What is your name? And this helps us to remember some, or gives us some opportunities or questions that we can converse with people so that we can go deeper than just house and weather. Okay, house is where do you live or where are you from? So instead of saying, do you live here? No. Yes. Kind of limits the conversation. So where are you from? And that gives them the opportunity to say as much as they want or as little as they want. Number three, family in the house. Tell me about your family. You know, it's really important to talk. Say it this way. Instead of, have you got a family? What if they don't? You know, that could be a bit awkward. Tell me about your family. Well, I've got, I'm single, and I've got a mum and dad. So you're not limiting the conversation. Tell me about your family. And for some people, family are really important. And that's more important than their work status. You know, white middle class people, they get often, a lot of European people get their status from what they do. Maori Pacific Island type of people and other ethnic groups, they get their status from their family, who they belong to. And so, holding the clock, what do you do with your time? You don't say, what do you do for work? Because they might say, I don't have any job. I play PlayStation all day or something. What do you do with your time? Again, that opens the conversation up. A tennis plane, has a plane coming out of it. Where have you travelled? You don't say, have you travelled anywhere? But where have you travelled? They might not have been out overseas, but they might have been to Stewart Island. And so it gives them the opportunity to travel. Talk about where they've travelled. I went to Invercargill the other weekend, and it was completely different than what I expected. In a good way, of course. No, I didn't think bad things anyway. I thought it was going to be a bit more colder. Tennis racket, what do you do for relaxation? What do you do for relaxation? This is really important because not everybody's into sport. I know that's hard to believe and they should be shot, but not everybody's. They might like chess. Or I guess that's kind of a sport. I don't know. They might like sewing. They might be into dancing or something. So what do you do for relaxation? I read books. So you're not narrowing the conversation or the field of what to say. You're actually giving them opportunity to express themselves. What do you do for relaxation? Go hunting. And light bulb is, what are ideas, opinions? What do you think about this? What's your thoughts concerning this? And so the light bulb sort of is like, when you're having a conversation, you might be talking about, where have you travelled? I went to India, or I went to Afghanistan, talking to someone recently who'd been to Afghanistan. And so I threw the light bulb in there and I says, what do you think about the difference between the way people live in Afghanistan and the way people live in New Zealand? Well, what do you think about, you know, there might be a current event that's been happening in Invercargill that the community are up in arms. And as you're talking about that, because that's important to them, you know, what do you think? What is your opinion about this topic? And it doesn't have to be, at this stage, we're not really looking at spiritual conversations, but we're actually getting to know people better. And when you practice this, it kind of looks, it feels a bit fake because you go through one for the other. But you don't just start out at one and go all the way down to six. But the idea is you've got these questions and you can use them in the conversation. And because with different people, some of them will be more important to them than others. And so, but you're armed to be able to get to know someone, to build a relationship, to have opportunities to be able to talk about more than just the weather or how your sports team did in the weekend. So let's do this all together. Let's all stand up. If you don't want to stand up, you don't have to, but I encourage you to stand up. If you're not a senior citizen, you can stand up. Alrighty, so what we'll do is we'll go through the thing. So what is your name? And then we'll say the corresponding question is to it. Okay, so we have a... which is... on top of the number plate, we have a
house.
Where are you from? And in front of the house is a
family.
Tell me about your family. Family are holding a
clock.
What do you do with your time? And the clock there is a
plane.
Excellent. And on the plane there is a and. Excellent. What do you do for relaxation? We're nearly there. And screwed into the propeller is a... yeah, excellent. All righty, have a seat. Because of time, we normally practice with one another and we actually go through those questions. But I encourage you to go... These are great questions at church. These are great questions when you're interacting with other people because you can use them to get to know people that you don't know. You know, it's interesting as Christians even... we go to church and new people come along and we feel uncomfortable even talking to people that we don't normally associate with because we kind of don't know what to say. Well, this can help us. This sort of basic thing can help us. But we need to kind of move on. So you can get to know them. You find out stuff about them. And we need to always remember to use conversational expanders. See, because it's like you can only... so if you're talking about your family, there's only so many... there's only so much stuff that they will say before you run out of that question. Because you can only ask that question once. And they might speak for hours or they might give you one sentence or 1 minute of conversation. So use conversational expanders. And the conversational expanders are who, what, where, when, why, and how. I went over to India. What brought you over to India? It's a good question. Or, you know, if you actually get to a spiritual conversation, I don't believe in God. Oh, sorry. You should. But you don't say that, but you say, why don't you believe in God? And then you can actually find a lot about why they believe what they believe or what they've experienced. Tell me about your family. I don't have a family. What happened? And that gives them the opportunity to be able to share as much as they want or as little as they want. And it gives you the opportunity to be able to build strong relationships so that you can create an environment of discipleship. Remember the conversational expanders, the who, the what, the where, the when, the why, how. I've got one of our trainees with us. She's been with the Hawke's Bay branch for about a year. And, you know, we go out and we share the gospel. We might be going door knocking or things like that. And she's always like, oh, I'm so amazed. Because we talk to someone and they're not really interested. So I just kind of use this, what we're going through today. And we spend like an hour with them. They're not interested in the gospel at all. And so just by using the conversational stack and the conversational expanders, we are just conversing. And I'm asking them questions, and they're doing a lot of the talking. And by the time the hour is finished of conversation, of being able to share the gospel, we have the connection. And often we can go back again some other time. And it's not because I'm anybody special, because it's not. It's just I've just been able to learn a few skills using the conversational expanders, the conversational areas. Okay, so from the conversational stack, we move into the ministry areas. Okay, so we have a... Come on, we can do this a little bit better than that. Come on. Okay, we have a... And you use their name, remember? On top of the number plate is a... Yeah, in front of the house is a... Family are holding a... The clock hand is a... Where have you travelled? The propeller of the plane is a... Excellent. And the light bulb? Excellent. Oh, you're supposed to say light bulb. And now, on the light bulb, there is a chicken for Christmas. Okay, on the light bulb is a chicken for Christmas. Yeah, it's good. It's good. And in the steam, out of the chicken for Christmas, there's steam. And in the steam, you can see dreamy goalposts. All righty, just stay with me, please. And on top of the goalposts is a trophy. Okay, so we'll do, what's this? This is a... Light bulb is? Excellent. On top of the light bulb is a? Chicken. It has to be a chicken for Christmas. No other chicken will do. So on the light bulb is a? Now in the steam coming up, you can see? Dreamy goalposts. And on top of the goalpost is a? Trophy. Excellent. Jeremy, what the heck are you talking about? Okay, so the trick, these are associated with questions that we can ask. Chicken for Christmas, what are your challenges, frustrations, concerns? You're expecting to be a parent? That's amazing. Oh, that's so cool. What is a concern that you have leading up to pregnancy? You know, because a lot of first-time mums are nervous about a lot of different things. And they're all different. Some people are nervous for the pregnancy itself. Some people are nervous and terrified about the birth. And some people are nervous about what's going to happen afterwards because everything else is just natural. And so that's an opportunity. What are your challenges? You know, you've got teenagers. Oh, I hope they're all like me. No, I'm just kidding. You've got teenagers, so as you're raising your teenagers, what do you think is the biggest challenge that teenagers face today? Or what do you think as parents of teenagers do you think one of the biggest challenges is? And then they can share what they think. You know, it creates opportunity to talk more deeper. Could be something, it could be a current event that you're talking about. Just throw in that chicken for Christmas. What do you think, what do you think the greatest challenge our government has moving forward next year, if you're into that sort of thing? So, chicken for Christmas is challenges, frustrations, and concerns. The dreamy goalposts are, what are your dreams and goals? Everybody has dreams and goals. When I grow up, I want to be a princess. Or some of us wanted to be a princess. But some of us wanted to be an All Black. You know, and what happens as we get older? Life crushes us, and what do you want to do? I don't know. Remember, there was a program years ago, and they followed these kids, and when they were little, 4 or 5, they wanted to be great things. And then when they interviewed them when they were kind of like 10, and then when they were 15, and when they were 20, and most of them, by the time they got to 15, all their dreams were crushed, and they didn't have any idea what they wanted to do. So what are your dreams? What are your goals? You know, as a mum, what would you love to see your kids become? You know, and you talk to mums or potential mums, they've got their ideas. And they will talk to you about that. And that's really cool. Trophy, what are your achievements? You know, you might be talked, this is specific, maybe to their work, to their sport, maybe to their life. Oh, so you're into biomechanics. So tell me about that, please, because I have no idea what that is. But, you know, what sort of things have you achieved in that area? People love to talk about themselves. And the more we can open up the conversation, the more they feel connected to us because they're talking about themselves, and the more we can learn who they are and the more opportunities we have to be able to speak truth into their lives because they'll naturally occur. Okay, so we have the... which is... what are your ideas? Will be for black. Alrighty, what are your ideas? And on the light bulb is a... which is... yeah, so what are your challenges, frustrations, concerns? And the steam coming from the chicken, you see dreamy. What are your dreams and goals? And on top of the goalpost is a... yeah, what are your achievements? Remember the what are first. Excellent. And, you know, so we can do this to other Christians, these kind of conversations. Because we've all got challenges, frustrations, concerns, haven't we? We've all got struggles. Wait patiently for an answer. This is really important. Don't try, you know, you ask a question and there's a little bit of silence, so you feel uncomfortable, and so you try and answer it for them. Don't do that. Or you try and change the question to get them an answer or to help them hurry up. A lot of people don't have meaningful conversations, so it's okay to let their brain think about it first. So just wait patiently for an answer. And if they're not interested, then they'll tell you. And then that'll be the end of the conversation. But don't try and speak for them. Have you ever been in a conversation where someone does that? Do you kind of like that person? Do you kind of feel love towards that person? Or do you kind of feel like you want to finish this conversation? So wait patiently for an answer. Respond in love, just as we've got about a minute and 20 left. Affirm. We need to affirm people. So many people out there need encouragement. We need encouragement. Two rules. Don't criticize, condemn, or complain. This is so important. Don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Be honest and show sincere appreciation. You know, if someone tells you something that's not right, you don't condemn them. You don't criticize them. You don't complain about something else. But you can be honest and show sincere appreciation that they actually talked to you about it or shared something. Because they don't have to talk to you, but they chose to. Because they were taking a risk, because you're opening yourself up to them, therefore they felt safe enough to open themselves up to them. Remember the compliment pattern, pats. You know, it's not a pats. The pat. P stands for personality, character traits. You know, if you notice something, compliment them on it. I see that you're a real person of integrity. I just really appreciate that because there are so many people that are not people of integrity. Oh, you're so honest. I appreciate your honesty. We need more people to be honest. If there were more honest people out there, this place would be a lot better place. So you know what? As you're having conversation with people, what characteristics are they showing that are good? You can compliment them on that. Accomplishments. Not as good as personal character, but it is good, you know. Well, that's amazing that you did that. You know, when someone says something that they've done, instead of, what often happens is instead of complimenting them, someone else pipes up to one-up them. Well, actually, we can, and you know, or when you're around parents, oh, my son did this, oh, my son did this, oh, my son did this. And although it's not meant to be, it can almost become a competition. But instead of like, I know you sort of, it might spark your memory to something that your child done, but just take a step back and just, oh, that's really great. You must be so proud that they spewed up all over you. I don't know, but you know, compliment, you know, encourage them with their accomplishments. And then you've got thanks.
things. It's just, oh, I like your car. Things that are not the greatest ways to compliment people. But, there's always something to compliment someone by. I like the way you did your hair. It takes the focus off your face. No, don't say that. Don't say that. Respond in love. So we need to respond in love, and that's not the way. So, and just finishing. So in the trophy, we have a bunch of flowers. Okay, we have a bunch of flowers. So we have a bunch of flowers. And then as we look in the flowers, we see a man drowning, crying, help. A man drowning, crying, help. And then above the man drowning, crying, help, we have praying hands. And because my time is going, we can't really go through that. But this is a bunch of flowers. Affirm, affirm, affirm. In your conversation, encourage the person. Thank the person. At times, affirming might be an appropriate touch. Appropriate touch. And you've got to be careful with the opposite sex and stuff. But we are people growing up are physically, they're starved of physical contact. The hand on the shoulder, cry with someone if that needs be. But affirm them. Affirm, affirm, affirm. How can I help? Man, try and cry and help. How can I help? Is there anything I can do to help? I can't promise anything, but if I can. And the last one is 10-second prayer. And you can actually say a lot in 10 seconds if you get rid of all the religious jargon out of your prayers. Oh, Father, Lord, Father God, we just thank you and come before you, Father God. God knows his name. He knows who you're talking to. But pray for them. If I am witness, in every witnessing situation, I always ask at the end of it if I can pray for them. If I'm talking to a Christian, I'll try and I'm encouraging a Christian. I'll try and say, can I pray for you? And it'll be based on the conversation that we've had. 10 seconds. Lord, I just pray that you would help this person come to know you, that they'll know the truth, and the truth will set them free. In Jesus' name, amen. Or, Lord, I thank you for my brother, I thank you for my sister, but we've remembered their name. So it was, thank you for Cheryl. I pray that you just really help her with her relationship with her family. Give her the support and the comfort that she needs over this time. In Jesus' name, amen. Something like that. 10-second prayer. Just like that. Wouldn't it be awesome that if every person, that every Christian that you had a conversation with prayed with you? Wouldn't that make you feel important? Wouldn't that make you feel encouraged? How about if every non-Christian person that you had a conversation with, that you were able to pray with them? And 9 times out of 10, when I ask a non-Christian and pray for if I could pray for them, what they say? Yes. Very few people actually ever say no. And they are so appreciative. So thank you very much. My time is gone. And we will carry on with this in the last session. Thank you.